The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
It's spinning! It's spinning! Jonathan Sexton has made it!
Do you feel moderately happy?
No, I feel like I've been kissing my sister, I suppose.
In the pocket for his drop goal attempt. Here he goes, O'Gara. He's done it! That surely is the grand slam.
We target players all the time. That's part of rugby, isn't it? Let me know.
Sexton, wonderful pass, and Stockdale finishes.
There'll be more than grenades. There'll be full tanks and full shells landing on the Aviva.
Grand Slam winners on St. Patrick's Day at Twickenham.
Yeah, you're welcome along to Wednesday Night Rugby. Irish rugby news is all a bit grim at the moment, so we might start on a bit of good news involving Joey Carberry, now 25 years old, Joey Carberry. He's upping his workload. Joan Van Gran said he's edging closer to a return. That was the latest dispatch from Munster today. Still no set date. However, according to Van Gran, Carberry's in the gym. Physically, he's involved now in certain pitch sessions with the team, training with the team, attack and defence. He's increasing his time on the pitch, the speed with which he's running at, all increasing, mentally in a very good place. Munster, of course, at Murrayfield this weekend against Edinburgh. Craig Casey, Andrew Conway, Shane Daly, Chris Farrell all return to the province. So that, at least, Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent, is some good news to kick things off on.
Definitely. He could potentially be the missing link for this Irish team, not to put too much pressure on his shoulders straight away. And I think it is
important. But he could come back and solve everything.
Yeah, he's the Messiah. I think it's important not to rush him and to give him time and space to test all of his ankle, ease his way back in. It's been 13, it'll be probably possibly 14 months by the time he actually comes back. So, I mean, and we've seen Dan Levy's had to go for surgery this week on his knee. So that's maybe a caution. I think Johan Van Gran spoke today about how that is a bit of a cautionary tale, and Leinster haven't rushed Dan Levy in any way. They've been very, very patient with him, but this is the nature of the game they're playing. And Joey Carberry does have a fairly stacked injury list, kind of injury CV, I suppose, at this stage. But in terms of his playing ability when fit, his potential to get even better, and his capacity to come straight into the setup and challenge Johnny Sexton as a starter, but also potentially offer them a second distributor option from fullback, it's hard not to think that he's been a massive loss to this Irish setup for the last pretty much since the World Cup, because he wasn't really himself at the World Cup and was missed massively, and he will be a huge asset to Andy Farrell considering what's going on with Ireland at the moment and all of the discussions around both the attacking game plan and the succession plan at number 10.
Niamh, you know firsthand about serious injury and coming back from serious injury, unfortunately, and in Carberry's case, this is all very positive, and yet, as I suspect you do know, there is probably a very big difference between this control environment where he's probably not running flat out, where he's not twisting and turning without a fair degree of conscious thought at the moment, as opposed to full-on test-level demands.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'll probably be this time next year where we'll see the real Joey Carberry back. It's going to take that length of time. I think if they're going to ease him back in and they're going to mind him, you know, like they say they are, which they absolutely should do. And, you know, to be fair to Leinster, they've done the exact same for Dan Levy. And look, it's great news. I think you'll see. I was in around the high performance unit yesterday in Munster, and you could just see that there was a really good buzz around. And for him himself, more importantly, I think to be, you know, it's very difficult to stand on the sidelines, and while you're in meetings and you're there, you're not really there. It's very hard to feel a part of it. So I'd say now he's probably buzzing, to be fair, to be able to get back in. But I think caution should be the word to be used, and patience for the next while, and just let him get, you know, a few games under his belt in terms of playing rugby week in, week out for Munster, because it's going to be consistency now that he'll need.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, there's still no set date for his return. Rory, on the French camp then, Fabien Galthié has tested positive for COVID. What's the latest there?
Yeah, William Serbach tested positive today, and it looks like the Sevens team have gone into isolation, and they trained with the French squad last week. So there's probably a little bit of concern there, although Ireland have returned a full case or full batch of negatives, so there's no sense that it's impacted on Ireland. And it does sound like, I think all the French players were okay, but it's the coaching staff who've been affected. So, I mean, considering the French government were pretty concerned coming into this about letting the whole tournament go ahead, it's not ideal that the French setup have had the first outbreak, other than Josh Adams going to his gender reveal party, which wasn't an outbreak, but it was a breach. But it's not great for the tournament, but there's no sign that, you know, it's obviously going to affect France ahead of their next game, but it doesn't sound like it's having any wider ramifications beyond that just yet.
Yeah. And from a French point of view, Rory, so I presume if their game against Scotland was this weekend, there'd be all sorts of trouble in the air. The fact is they have that extra week to get ready and get out of isolation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what the rules are in France, but I mean, was it a 10-day isolation if you're positive at the moment? So, you know, Eddie Jones missed a good chunk of England's build-up to the opener. He did the Six Nations launch from isolation. You know, whether that fed into their underperformance against Scotland, I wouldn't be so sure. But certainly, it's going to be very hard to run a team from your hotel room or from your home. I'm sure their staff, you know, they're at this stage of the tournament, you're implementing stuff that's already been put in place. But at the same time, if the sheriff is not around to kind of marshal the troops, is there a fall off in standards? Maybe if Sean Edwards is the man driving things, that doesn't happen. But yeah, it's definitely disruptive. But this French team seemed to thrive a little bit in kind of less structured environments. You know, they're not as reliant on being overcoached as other countries. So. And they're quite young and quite adaptable, I would imagine. So, no, it's definitely like it's going to be a key focus for them going into that Scotland match, and it probably levels the playing field somewhat, with Scotland also looking for a bit of a response. And you know, no one wants their bubble to be breached at the moment. It's pretty much not the worst thing that could happen, but it's high up there.
So, I want to get your thoughts, obviously, on the Irish performance, Niamh. What's the most concerning aspect over the last two games, based on what you're seeing?
There's a couple of things. I think we've conceded very soft tries from individual errors, particularly on the edges, which is a little bit concerning. And then our attack, it's very lateral, it's very flat. I know that you've had Brian Driscoll and Keith Wood and Tony Donnan, and they've all spoke about it. But for me, it's really disappointing to see so many good players that we finally have, you know, in that back line, and not being able to use them. I'd say it's very frustrating for them.
That's the most damning thing in some ways. Like, I saw Sam Warburton picked his Lions team thus far in the Championship and had Henshaw and Ringrose in the team. So we have Henshaw and we have Ringrose there. We have James Lowe, who's all action for Leinster. We have Keith Earls, who, when he's not having to chase box kicks all day, is still a bloody good player. We have Hugo Keenan. We saw his hands against Munster at Thomond Park, and they are reduced as a cohort to looking like they don't have much going on, Niamh.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, that still that did the rounds on social media during the week on, you know, the Stonehill line out, and they look up and it's almost like a fear of failure, a fear of making a mistake. I'm not sure, you know, what that atmosphere or what the repercussion of trying to have a go brings to them in the review the following day. But I think that was probably the most concerning thing. I think if you look at their attack, when they get into phase play, it's almost like they come really late around the corner. So their hips are at the touchline, but there's nobody there to straighten the line. So you're kind of just depending on Gary Ringrose to try and tuck the ball under his arm and have a step back inside. But, you know, if I'm defending Ireland, I'd be delighted to be, I'd actually nearly be giving them the ball and let them make mistakes and live off that, as opposed to feeling fear when they have it, because they don't exploit it. And I felt at times, you know, they looked to get the ball to the edge, but never moved forward. So basically, you know, Billy Burns passes to Robbie Henshaw. He doesn't move, you know, any steps forward. He passes to Ringrose, doesn't move any steps forward. So as a defence, it's really easy just to shepherd across and use the touchline as an extra defender. And at the first game, I thought that Ireland were chasing their tail a bit because they were down a player and that they were late coming around the corner all the time. But it must be a ploy that they're an attacking, it must be a way if they want to attack that they're going to, you know, come late. But it makes very little sense to me, because you're either depending on Gary Ringrose or your winger to get the ball in very little space and try and create some magic. I can't see the sense of it, really, to be honest. So I would, for me, for players like, you know, Hugo Keenan, Gary Ringrose, James Lowe, Keith Earls, Jordan Larmour, if you get, you know, if they're early set up and they're straight, well, then they can step inside or outside, whereas at the moment they don't have that option.
Eddie O'Sullivan did a piece, Niamh, on Against the Head, where he showed numerous other examples to go with the stolen line-out example you've mentioned, where Ireland had an overlap and chose not to use it. And like serious overlaps as well, often like 2-3 extra men, and yet took it back into contact, and he couldn't really figure it out either. And when you talk there about late round the corner and hips facing the touchline, you know, you think of Johnny Sexton at his best, and he very much has hips facing the opposition, and he'll pull that pass late. You know, he really fixed the defenders in front of him. And now, you know, that picture you paint of hips facing towards the touchline and Ireland crabbing across the pitch almost laterally. I mean, the intellectual knowledge is there. I mean, they've seen Sexton and other proponents at their best and not doing that. So why have we drifted into this is the burning question at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's a question for the management. I think they, you know, they have these incredibly good players at their disposal. It's not as if we're trying to make do with players that aren't good enough at this level. You know, that back line is more than capable. I thought it was very interesting that they selected Billy Burns to start at 10 and yet, you know, kicked all the time, whereas your tactic was to kick all the time, then put the more natural kicker at the start. You know, Ross Burns is a way more natural kicker than Billy Burns. Billy Burns is good at running 10. He's good at seeing space late. He's good at, you know, off-the-cuff stuff. So was it a case of they tried to back him, but then played in a game plan that didn't suit him?
I think that's what it was. I think they felt a pressure to back Billy Burns because of what happened at the end of the game in Cardiff, and chose the wrong 10 for the game plan they had, which was so obviously to kick. But I think it was a show of faith in Burns.
That's fine then, but then don't put him in the situation where he's in now, because, you know, he's come off the pitch, and while you said he's not done anything really, really wrong, he hasn't done anything brilliant either. Mm. And now, you know, he's not really on anybody's tip of the tongue. You know, everybody's talking about, well, Ross Burns, you know, nailed his colours to the mast. Well, of course he did. He was playing with his whole back line that he plays his club with. So even if things weren't going awry, you know, for them, or things were going awry for them, he had an ability to be able to use the strengths of others around him that they knew about. But for me, you know, they had moments, especially in that big last phase where they got a half a break and they looked like they could eke up, you know, another few metres on the pitch, and all of a sudden we're 10 or 15 metres back. And that's a big concern for Ross Byrne as well. And while he played very well and he kicked incredibly well, they're the moments that you've got to judge at this level, and it wasn't good enough for me.
And one last one before I bring Rory in. You used the phrase there a few times, late around the corner, late coming around the corner. What does that mean? What's the issue with that? Why is that happening? Explain what that means if I'm watching the game on TV.
Yeah, it just means that as you come, you're kind of almost a couple of seconds behind the ruck, so that you're arriving around with your hips facing the touchline as opposed to your hips straightened. Now, there's no issue if you catch the ball towards the touchline but straighten in your first step. Then you fix what the defender is in front of you, and then you open space for other people around you. Or if you're drifting in around the corner but there's people outside you that are straight. So like Hugo Keenan, you know, like Keith Earls, like James Lowe. I remember being coached by Greg McWilliams very early on in my career, and he used to say to me, stand in around the 15 because you're coming onto the ball straight. Mm. And then allows you then to be able to step in or out, but also gives you options. Whereas if you're coming around the corner and you're not straight, you're just drifting with the ball as opposed to putting something on it. And therefore, it's really difficult then. You're eating space up outside you, and it's really hard to generate pace off that.
Yeah. Rory, what's really notable about all of that is these are things that Niamh says she heard very early on in her career. They are fundamental basics to attacking play.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all very concerning, really, isn't it? I mean, these are excellent rugby players who've been the best player on their team the whole way up in you know, at all levels, who have been able to do all of the things that they're being asked to do all the way up, and suddenly they get to the Six Nations and they're not executing at all. And I do think this coaching ticket has made an effort to try and remove some of the structure around the way they're playing, but the players don't seem to be adapting to that particularly well. And look like they're a little bit lost with that responsibility, which is definitely a worry. The attacking strategy looks a bit muddled to me. I don't understand why we're kicking, you know, Gary Owens off first phase, clean lineup, but you know, why would you go off the top and then kick a Gary Owens? I mean, that's something that we haven't seen for 30, 40 years as an attacking tactic. I accept the forecast was pretty bad. But you know, even still, you should trust your skills and use that golden attacking opportunity to try and test the defence in a much better way. And maybe they saw a weakness in France's back three, but whatever they saw didn't materialise because Brice Dulan was absolutely superb. But they kept doing it throughout the game, despite the fact that France had coped pretty well. And fair enough, if you're a kicking team, they're a kicking team. But France were a better kicking team on Sunday. Yeah. All of France's kicks were more effective than Ireland's kicks. Selection is a big issue because I think the squad selection at the start has left them a little bit of a hostage to fortune. I mean, he ended up starting Gibson Park, who is a running, I think he's a perfect sub, but is not a great starter and is very much a running tempo number nine. And he was trying to play a game control role at nine. Whereas Luke McGrath's better at that. John Cooney's better at that. John Cooney's in the stand as the 24th man, having only been added to the squad the day before the game. Luke McGrath's not even in the squad. And then you've got Craig Casey on the bench, who's definitely one for the future and possibly could do a job right now. But here you are in the last 20 minutes against France and you've got a rookie on the bench and you don't trust him, obviously. When you've got Kieran Marmion, who's done it before, beating the All Blacks in England, Luke McGrath and Cooney, you know, sitting at home. You know, you start with a 10 who's not the best goal kicker at his own club, who looked very low on confidence. You know, a few things he did well, but I thought he was cagey in what he did. And that early one that Niamh spoke about, when he had the overlap and he kicked it away, that was indicative to me of a player who was just trying to feel his way into the game when Ireland actually needed someone in that position, which is the problem position at the moment, to grab the game by the scruff of the neck. All of that being said, they were a whisker away from being 10-0 up, or certainly 8-0 up, after what was the 25 minutes with France were in the bin and started quite well and lost their way again. So even with all of those issues that we've kind of pointed out, their game management has been poor as well within games. And they've kind of had this consistent problem in the third quarter of games where they've lost their way. And Andy Farrell's talked about it, but hasn't been able to fix it. So there's a myriad of issues there. The attacking game is clearly the most obvious thing that we can all see. There's a lot of heart and a lot of fight and a lot of determination, and the players are clearly playing for the coach, and I think they like the environment and all of that sort of thing. But at this level, you need a whole lot more than that, and we're not seeing that at the moment.
Yeah, sorry. Just a thing for me as well is there doesn't seem to be any clear kind of pathway in terms of what they're looking for. So when Joe Schmidt arrived into Ireland first, you know, at Leinster, he was going to make them the best passing team, and Leinster were unbelievable at passing. And when he started with Ireland, it was, you know, something that he continued on. Ireland were brilliant at passing. Mm. Yet we aren't, you know, our execution, our accuracy, you know, every ball doesn't really, we can't run onto, because for me, that accuracy, that execution isn't where it needs to be. To like that James Lowe try, you know, should have been a try. But if you look at the passes in the lead up to that, you know, they weren't great. So everybody's kind of reaching. And at this level, if you're taking a half a step to reach back or to the left or to the right or whatever it is, then your space is gone. The moment is gone. Mm. You've got to be way more technically astute than that. And they don't have that.
Yeah, Keith Wood mentioned that the other night. He said there's a lack of confidence and crispness in the passing. And so your point is each of those not so great passes costs the next player a fraction of a second, and they add up by the time you get out to James Lowe.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think there was a big mantra, you know, when the Ireland were doing so well over, you know, 2016, 2017, 2018, about, you know, you've got to have your job so right that the next person looks brilliant. Mm. And that's what they lived off, that mantra. That was their ethos, and it really served them well. Okay, I know things took a different route after that, you know, 2018 brilliant season. But they've got to go back to that. They've got to find some middle ground where their skill level has to be better in the coalface.
Yeah.
That's non-negotiable for me, I think, in terms of their attack and what they're trying to do.
Yeah, I'm glad you raised the point of skill and not making mistakes, because, Rory, I think we have just become a team that make what you would call uncharacteristic mistakes. But now if we keep making them 2 years on, they just sort of become characteristic. Like, they become a team that unfortunately makes silly errors, and the initial reaction as a viewer is to go, oh, well, look, that's not like that player and he's a better player than that. But for some reason, that's almost infected the team a little bit. And Niamh talks about ethos as well. And it was very interesting listening to Andy Dunn on Off the Ball on Sunday after the game. And he was talking, as Andy often does, about just bigger picture for a second, away from the specifics of this game. He was asking questions about, for instance, just the lack of offloading. And again, it feels like we've been talking about that for a couple of years now. And he cited the example of, do you remember when Gibson Park and Lowe had that exchange on the left-hand side of the pitch? You know, a bit of spontaneity broke out and you saw a little flash of the Lowe we see at Leinster. And Andy made the point that nobody around them was alive to the moment and went with them. You know, they were practically on their own. It was almost as if the rest of the team kind of stunned at this moment of unplanned offloading and back and forth that sort of happened. And Andy made the point that on numerous occasions across the game, Irish players, when Ireland have the ball, will have their back to the ball and they'll be more worried about jogging back to get into their next pod for three phases down the line, as opposed to being alive to the moment a bit more. Now, we can't become the Babas, you know, and nobody's advocating that, and structure is important. But like, we still haven't really hit the heads up rugby, in so much as people like Andy or Brian O'Driscoll or you guys can see that you really would have hoped a year and a bit into the Farrell Mike Catt regime that we would have. You know, it's still fairly prescribed and we're bottom of the offload charts and we're bottom of the line break charts, and you just kind of wonder what's going to change.
Yeah, there's been no shortage of possession. They've had more passes and more runs than anyone else in the tournament, and they've scored two tries. They're throwing one offload in every 54 possessions that they have, which is just an outrageous, an outrageously conservative number. That's incredible that they're one in 54. And I think the problem is that they're not prescribed in what they do in some ways, because they're not really, they don't really have that kind of prescriptive Joe Schmidt plan to get through to have that level of incision off first phase or second phase in the way that Joe built those plays.
Yeah,
they're being trusted to do it themselves, and yet they're playing conservatively when they're doing it, if you know what I mean. So they're being told to play heads up rugby, but when they get out there, whether it's confidence or a lack of confidence in whatever structure they've been given, they're not executing what they're doing well enough or accurately enough to do it. You know, we've seen Ringrose make little half breaks, we've seen Earls make little half breaks, but there's no one on their shoulder, there's no one ready for the offload, or else the person is so focused on winning the ball back at ruck time, which is probably something that's come from the previous era, or maybe that's what Paul O'Connell's focus is on, that their heads are down and they're ready to hit the ruck rather than accept the pass. And you know, even that bit of magic from Gibson Park and Lowe, like Gibson Park gets rushed into touch, ultimately it handed possession back to France. So it's muddled, you know. There's little glimpses of things here and there, but it's far from enough. And it's, you know, these players are better than what we're seeing. I think ultimately it comes back to, are the coaching tickets and are the players getting, are they matching the potential of what they have there on paper?
Yeah.
And I think in probably 12 out of, maybe 13 out of 15 positions, you've got really, really, really good top quality international players. And those players are good enough to do better than what we're seeing at the moment. I don't know, is it they're left being left down by, you know, inexperience and lack of confidence at 10, which is obviously the link between the forwards and the backs. Maybe the tactics need to go more around their 9. Maybe the 9 needs to run the play more. You know, as Andy has spoken about previously in that interview maybe a couple of weeks ago, which was really, really interesting to listen to. But if your 10 isn't as good as Johnny Sexton, which, let's face it, it's not going to be for the next little while, if at all, you know, there's no guarantee that there's a Johnny Sexton coming, then you need to rethink how you're doing things. You can't just keep playing the Johnny Sexton game hoping that Billy Burns, Ross Byrne or someone else can carry it out, because, you know, Johnny Sexton's 35 and he's got a lot of injuries. You know, he's not playing as well as he used to. So Like, it sounds like they're going to bring him back for Italy, but it just feels like you're kicking the can down the road there, and you're kind of sleepwalking through this World Cup cycle, making all the same mistakes you made before, except for you don't have the Joe Schmidt master plan to get you through and get success along the way.
Yeah. It's not all doom and gloom, obviously. The O'Connell impact is fairly obvious, Niamh. The set piece has improved dramatically, so that's, you know, that's great. But you mentioned the defence, because I do want to ask you guys about how we use the next three games, and the thought of Sexton coming back for Italy just seems like nobody thinks it's a good idea, to be honest. But on defence, the question is sort of brewing over the week. Is it down to the system, or is it down to just the really bad individual mistakes, reads, decisions that we're seeing from Lowe in particular, or Gibson Park at the weekend? Is there any great issue with the Irish defence which is putting undue pressure on the individuals?
No, I think for the most part, I think the defensive system has been really, really good. I think they've, you know, put teams under a lot of pressure, and they've tried to get teams to hold on to the ball as much as they could. And to be fair, you know, that inside defence really managed the DuPont situation really well in terms of the runners off and the no-look passes, and they held firm. I think you've got to remember those two mistakes on Sunday, where two Southern Hemisphere rugby players, really, who grew up probably not really having much appreciation of defence, because over there they just try and score as many tries as they can, and if you score one, well, we'll try to score two. And I think we have to be very mindful of that. In saying that, I think they've both been playing with Leinster now for a long time, so I think there were two big individual mistakes, and you know, cost us a couple of tries. And I think you've got to be more mindful and better disciplined in the scoring zone when the opposition team had the ball, and those lapses have been really costly. And I think it's going to be something that they're going to have to work really hard on.
Yeah. I wonder how much latitude, Rory, you give to a player like James Lowe, who brings so much to the party when Ireland do have the ball. I mean, his left boot is incredible, and obviously we know what he can do on the ball for Leinster in particular. But I mean, Ireland can't really be a team that afford to give up one, two soft tries a game. Like, the margins are too fine for that.
Well, especially when they're only scoring one, you know. I mean, yeah. If you're going to try and be a nil all, you know, in football terms, a nil all kind of 1-0 team, you need to have everything really watertight at the back. And they're not, you know, those individual errors, there's only so much tolerance Andy Farrell will be able to have with that. You know, I would have Stockdale back in there if he was fit, because I think he does a lot of the same things. He brings some of the same problems, but I think he's got more attacking upside, to be honest, at that level. I don't think James Lowe has proven himself just yet. I mean, It doesn't help that he's been asked to kick the ball, albeit wonderfully. He's got a lovely left foot that Leinster have almost kept hidden for the last couple of years.
Yeah. But it actually says something about the two respective sides, that, you know, the casual viewer might think to themselves, if they were just watching Leinster matches, geez, I'd no idea James Lowe could kick the ball like that. And equally, if you only were somebody who watched Ireland matches, you'd be watching James Lowe going, I wonder, is he a good ball carrier?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the kind of the frustration of Ireland at the moment, that they have a player of that obvious ability. Now, when he's gone up a level against Saracens, he's struggled to break free as well. So, you know, there
could be a ceiling.
A small bit of concern that when he goes up this level, that it's not going to happen for him to the same degree. Like, he obviously was very good on debut against a struggling Wales team. But I think, like, he's very early in his international career. He is 29, but I mean, there's obviously, what we've seen from Leinster isn't a lie. And there is a lot there to like about what he does. And his kicking game is excellent. You can't have that much patience at this level, especially if we're picking, say, Johnny Sexton against Italy. Like, we're not in a development phase. Andy Farrell went out to win this tournament. He has clearly not said, I'm building towards the World Cup. So this is not a time for players to be making mistakes on the job. The coaching staff have explicitly said that this is a tournament that Ireland are going out to win. So there's not really any room for that kind of, you know, making the same mistakes over and over again and getting better on the job, because, you know, if you're going to do that, why not pick the 21-year-old? You know, like, why not bring in Harry Byrne? Why not fast track a couple of the under 20s from the last couple of years, because you know they've got more upside. They're more likely to learn from their mistakes than a 29-year-old. So, you know, it's all part of the same kind of muddled picture that kind of certain decisions undermine other decisions. And James Lowe, I think is certainly with Stockdale out injured, James Lowe is too good to miss out on selection for the next couple of games. But at the same time, if Ireland are serious about being, you know, in these competitions to win them, they're going to have a lot more consistent, he will have to defend better on a more consistent basis than he has done so far. And in particular, like, you could get away with, like, Joe Schmidt's team regularly conceded two or three tries during the best days of that regime, but they were scoring four or five. Yeah. You know, they beat the All Blacks and scored five tries, I think, in Chicago, certainly four.
It feels a long way away right now, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Our rugby coverage on Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team of us, everyone in. A final word from Niamh Briggs and Rory O'Connor. We've three games remaining then. Italy away next up, then Murrayfield, then England. There's a perverse kind of logic here. On the one hand, the pressure is off because Ireland are out of the Championship and out of the Triple Crown. And on the other hand, the pressure is now massively on because they're out of the Championship and out of the Triple Crown and 0-2. Like, so there is now serious scrutiny on Farrell. He really doesn't want to end up on March 20th 0-4 from these games. Rory, so this Sexton coming back in for the Italy game, we're basing this on things Farrell has said, are we?
Well, basing it on Farrell after the game said that he expects Murray and Sexton to be fit for the game, and then was subsequently asked, you know, do they come back in, or do you stick with the less experienced guys to give them that, you know, to build their experience at this level? And he said, no, we're there to win. You pick the best team to win the game on the day. And I think everyone interpreted that as Sexton and Murray, and Sexton is the captain after all. I think it's, you know, I've written this week, I think we need to skip a generation and bring forward, you know, Harry Byrne, because I don't think Ross, for all that his goal kicking is excellent, or Billy Burns, are going to be Ireland's out halves at the next World Cup. And you've got to have, nor are they probably complete enough to win games against England or even Scotland away. So if they're not good enough now and they're not going to be good enough in 2 years' time, like, why stick with them? Go get the guy who you think probably is going to be at that level and fast track him into the team against Italy. And if he does well against Italy, then stick with him. But if, you know, put Sexton on the bench and at least you have the security blanket of your experienced 96 capper on the bench, that doesn't seem to be, like, there's no indication that Harry Byrne, like, he's back with Leinster this weekend. They play the Dragons on Friday night while his brother Billy and Johnny Sexton are all in camp this weekend. So I would expect the two of them to come back. I think if Andy Farrell has basically prioritised the win. If we're worried, I think Keith said it on Monday, if Ireland are worried in a place where they're worried about losing to Italy, then the problems are a lot more serious than we thought they were. Yeah. And while Italy have shown kind of good bits and pieces across the board, they're very, very young. They've gone completely for a future team and showed some nice stuff against England, but ultimately got blown away. So, it does look like he's going to go for the strongest possible team against Italy. He's possibly prioritising kind of trying to get a bit of confidence into the team, trying to make sure he gets a win on the board. But, you know, as I said earlier, I think he's kicking problems down the line with that approach. And, yeah, you know, I would like to see Andrew Porter in a loose head and Furlong start a tight head. You know, I'd like to see Harry Byrne brought straight in and put in that number 10 jersey to give him the opportunity in the one game that you can, you know, take a bit of a risk in. I think whatever about Casey's abilities, I think nine is less of a concern because you have a lot of experienced nine starting across the provinces who are all, I think, good enough to start for Ireland at international level, like McGrath, Cooney. Like, that's not, I don't see nine as a problem. I think the big problems at the moment, the big problem is 10. I'm probably repeating myself, but like, until they fix it, it's going to be the thing we're talking about here for the next 2 or 3 years.
I need to go on a sabbatical then. I can't talk about it for 2 or 3 more years.
It's ridiculous. Like, it seems like no one's listening.
Can we apply some game theory here, Niamh? So this is really interesting how they treat the last three games. Say Sexton and Murray come back for Italy and they put 30, 40 points in Italy and it's so-so, and they obviously remain for Murrayfield and England. That's a high wire act for Andy Farrell. They better win those three games. I mean, really, for him to be able to say at the end of it, well, look, the Cardiff game, red card, bit messy. And sure, like everyone said, if we win the other games and win, beat one of France or England, then that's a reasonable championship. And I've delivered that, you know, and okay, fair enough. Now, if he goes with all the frontliners and doesn't deliver that, then it's a really disappointing championship. Cynically or otherwise, he could look at this now and say, this has not gone well, and like I can't guarantee wins in Murrayfield or against England, even with the frontline guys. There's a real argument. If I bring in Harry Byrne, if I bring in Craig Casey, if I throw one or two others in there and I announce to the general public, this is the plan, it's now about World Cup 2023, you're going to have to give these guys a break. You know, I think the country would be very sympathetic towards that, and I think there'd be no persecution of Harry Byrne or Craig Casey, and there'd be an understanding, well, that's why we lost to Murrayfield and it's great experience, and that's why potentially we lost to England. And maybe from a PR point of view, there's a way out of it that way. But like, geez, if he's bringing back the big boys and you know, then he better make damn sure he wins, or he's going to have an awful lot of questions. And look, maybe David Nusafour has to come into it here. Like, the RFU might well be saying to Andy Farrell behind the scenes, each win is a lot of money. You make damn sure you win these games, and don't worry about next year or the year after. This is all swirling around right now. How would you like to see Andy Farrell approach these last three games?
I think you do a lot of thinking off camera and off radio.
I have a very exciting life, Niamh, I have to tell you.
So I would think that the end part there, so I think the winning the games, the given the times at the moment, I think it'll be important to win and gain as much money as they can in order to stabilise what's happening behind the scenes. I also think Andy Farrell will want to win against Italy and put up a big score or a good performance so that they can carry momentum and confidence into it. But it's funny, you know, after the game on Sunday, the narrative was across the media, you know, depleted Ireland, lose against France, or run France close. And like, I just was like a bit of a giggle, because to be fair, bar Johnny Sexton, the rest of the team were there or thereabouts.
Oh, totally.
As international.
France were missing their out half and Vakatawa.
Completely. And also France probably left two or three really easy tries behind them. And that's, you know, they were definitely 20 points, 20, you know, but better than Ireland, yeah. I thought last weekend.
Yeah.
So I think you're definitely looking at taking pressure off in terms of if you play the young lads. But then you also run the risk of damaging them and their confidence. And this group of players, you know, as Rory mentioned earlier on, like they're really trying. Like they're backing this coaching ticket, and they, you know, they'll want to go and try and fix things. For me, it's not really about the players that are playing or starting. I think it's about the game plan. I think it's about what's going on behind the scenes. I think question marks have to be about how they attack and how they want to attack. There needs to be almost like a ripping up of the script and deciding, okay, this is what, you know, these are our strengths. These are our weaknesses in terms of, you know, we're not the biggest, most physical team, but we're incredibly quick and we've got good feet around contact. So let's try and work our game. Like the first scrum that we had, you know, Keith Earls took it up, ran down, you know, Jalibert's neck. And I thought, oh my God, we're trying something different here. This is great. Then we didn't see it again for the rest of the game. We kicked off that phase. I was like, okay, no, so we haven't. So we have to be really astute in terms of, you know, they're either going to have to turn around and say to these players, we're sticking with you, the likes of Conor Murray, Jaron Sexton, these guys, and saying, but this is how we're going to play. Or we're going to try the new lads, you know, the younger guys, we're going to give them their shot and like change or change the way we play. But my argument was this week is the same as it was last week. Why isn't Harry Byrne starting week in, week out for Leinster? Why aren't Ben Healy, Jack Rowley getting more game time with Munster? Well, you know, there has to be a reason behind this. So maybe they're not ready. So if they're not ready, well, then how can we throw them into an international setup and expect them to do well, or you know, and achieve things? So I think Johnny will probably start against Italy, absolutely, but you know, I more so if Conor Murray isn't fit, you know, I think that's going to be the big narrative. While they're all saying they're all fit now, you know, I wonder if Conor Murray is going to be fit. So if he isn't, well then you need Johnny Sexton there. But like, it's not just about the 10. So if you have somebody like Billy Byrne, Jack Carthy, Harry Byrne in there, well, you know, Robbie Henshaw is a Lions player. He's more than capable of directing a backline, taking that pressure off the 10. Because, you know, I'm telling you, I played 10 and 15. If you're a 10 and you're looking at everything that's going on, you're managing forwards, you're talking to scrum half, you love nothing better than the 12, 13, 15 saying, give me the ball. Mm. Just give it to me. We look after it. Yeah. There doesn't seem to be any of that. And that's probably the biggest kind of worry that I'd have going forward for the next three games.
Yeah, quite a few worries floating around at the moment. Niamh Briggs, thanks so much. Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent, thanks a million. Great to have you with us. And I should mention tomorrow, by the way, Six Nations Show Episode 2 is going to be live on our social channels. It'll be on otbsports.com and the OTB Sports app. That's at 10:30 tomorrow morning. It'll be Johnny Murphy and Alison Miller with Neil Tracy. That's tomorrow.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.